This is WBAI New York, Mass Backwards, and we're going to listen next to a classic episode of Gene Shepherd. We played it a couple of years ago and several years before that, but it's one of these southern weather stories about tornadoes and ball lightning. Seems highly appropriate for our little heat wave. Current temperature is 80 degrees. Well, it'll all be over by tonight, so they claim, except in the studios of WBAI New York. From May 27, 1966, here's Gene Shepherd.
New York, one of the RKO General family of stations, whose principles and practices assure you of responsible and informative broadcasting in the public interest. It's 10:15.
That is music to my soul. That is balm to the troubled spirit. And so, wherever you are tonight, this instant on that great yellow brick road of existence, wandering through the poppy fields of temptation, we suggest you pause in your labors, your struggle, your constant, unceasing war to find health, happiness, and success in this, the mid-20th century, and come sit here on my knee, baby. We have a few things that we'll discuss here, a few little things that we will talk over. And I will begin things now by singing an irreverent song. All right? I'm forever blowing bubbles, pretty bubbles. Oh, you don't like that, huh? All right, okay, how about this one? Red sails in the sunset. Oh, you don't like that either. How about this one? Oh, the monkey wrapped his tail around the point. Oh, you don't like that one either. Well, you stick around. We'll get down to the marrow. We'll get down to where the nerve endings just quiver in the hard, cold winds of reality. Excuse me while I put on my shades. You can tell right away that I'm not Chet Huntley, can't you? All right. All right, smart guy, are you ready? I want all of you to sit very quietly there for a moment. Grab the armrests. Hold on tight. I want you to look with a long, hard, cold stare at that loudspeaker grill on your dashboard. Are you ready? This is not a rhetorical question. I'm asking you a real question. Are you ready? Okay. All right. We now begin. And we have to set the scene first. You're looking at a bar, see? A Texas cowboy on a barroom floor had drunk so much that he could hold no more. And so he fell asleep with a troubled brain. Sleeping away there on a barroom floor to dream that he rode on the hellbound train. A hellbound train. The engine with murderous blood was damp and was brilliantly lit from a brimstone lamp. An imp for fuel was shoveling bones. Think about that for a moment. An imp for fuel was shoveling bones. While the furnace rang with a thousand groans, the boiler was filled with lager beer. And the devil himself was the engineer. Yeah, the passengers were mostly a motley crew, church member, atheist, Gentile, and Jew, rich man in broadcloth, beggars in rags, handsome young ladies, withered old hags, yellow men, black men, red, brown, and white, all chained together. Gargling off the sight, while the train rushed on at an awful pace, the sulphurous fumes scorched their hands and their face. Wider and wider, the country grew wider, wider. The country grew. It spread out on all sides, and faster the engine blew. Louder and louder, the thunder crashed. Brighter and brighter the lightning flashed, hotter and hotter the air became, till the clothes were burnt from each quivering frame. And out of the distance there arose a ghastly yell. Ha 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 ha! Ha ha! Said the devil. Ha ha! We're nearing hell! We're nearing hell! And oh, how the passengers all shrieked with pain and begged the devil to stop. To stop the train, but he capered about and danced with glee and laughed and joked at their misery. Oh, my faithful friends, you've done your work, and the devil can never a payday shirk. No, no, you've bullied the weak, you've robbed the poor, the starving brother you've turned from your door. You've laid up gold where the canker rust and given free vent. Ah, yes, to your beastly lust. You've justice scorned, yeah, and corruption sown and trampled the laws of nature down. You've drunk. You've rioted, cheated, plundered, and lied and mocked at God in your hell-born pride. You have paid full fare, and I'll carry you through. Yes, for it's only right that you should have your due. Of course. Why, the laborer always expects his hire. So I'll land you safe. I'll land you safe in the lake of fire. Yes, your flesh will waste in the flames. In the flames that roar, my imps will torment you. Evermore. Evermore. Forever. Ever. Then the cowboy, he awoke with an anguished cry. Oh, oh. His clothes wet with sweat, and his hair standing on high. And then he prayed as he never prayed before, till that hour, to be saved from his sin and the demon's power. And his prayers and his vows were not in vain, for he never rode that hell-bound train. He never rode that hell-bound train. Give me the train record, quick. Come on, do what I say like that. Get the attention, then let's go. That's it. Bring it up there, good. Very nice. That's it. The sound of that train. You poor little sheep are sitting there. Look. When I go like that, that means get his attention. You didn't know? Okay. Yeah, the sound of that hellbound train just a roaring along there. Boy, that's a sweating one. That's the kind of thing, you know. Speaking of hellbound trains and fears and scares of that kind, just laying there with the sweat pouring out of you. Just laying there looking up at the ceiling. Just waiting for it to happen. That reminds me of something. Could you hear everything I did? Was I covered up okay? I mean, not too much. Was it dramatic enough? Why do you want to do it again? No, I can do it again. Was it okay? It's fine, all right. Now, you know, I've got to get into these fears, these fears of the unknown, something coming out of the dark and sneaking up on you. Often are based on real physical knowledge, a secret knowledge of something that everybody knows and hardly anyone can prove. Have you ever seen St. Elmo's fire playing about the rigging of a ship?
just playing about that top. Oh, boy, I'll never forget the first time I ever saw. Now, this is a, have you ever heard of St. Elmo's fire? Well, St. Elmo's fire is a physical manifestation of, this is a long, complicated theory here about magnetism and earth magnetism, waves of force, electronic, anyway, we don't go into that. But let me tell you what St. Elmo's fire looks like. I remember one time, I'd heard about it as a kid, you know. Oh, forever. I heard about St. Elmo's fire. And one night, I am in the signal corps. Now, come on, don't argue about it. Let's wait till after the show. One night, I'm in the signal corps, say. And I'm standing under a tower, a 260-foot tower, which stood up in the night, you know, just stood up there like, boy, like some fantastic structure of hell itself. You ever look straight up a high-tension tower at 3 in the morning? Well, it's somehow scary. And during the day, it's a structure. During the night, at 3 o'clock in the morning, it's God knows what. I can't explain. It's a very scary thing. So I'm standing on the base of a tower one night, and way at the top, I see this blue shifting haze. At first, I thought it was the sky. I thought maybe somebody's fooling around up there, tuning the antenna elements with flashlights. And there was nothing but sound of wind. And that's it. Nobody's up there. And I turned and I called the duty corporal. I says, hey, what's going on? And he said, that's St. Elmo's fire, no problem. He'd been around for a long time. And I looked up at the top and you could see these little ghostly blue flames flickering back and forth on the antenna elements 200 feet above your head. Just a strange, eerie kind of, it just flickers and it flutters. It's kind of like a flame. Have you ever looked at a cigarette lighter that's in a high wind and it's a wind cigarette lighter and it gets nothing but a blue glow around the edge of it, and it doesn't look like a real flame, it's just like a blue glow, kind of, it's sort of blown away all the carbon, it's blue. You know what I'm trying to say here? It looks like a ghostly flame. It doesn't look like a real flame, it's unreal. One time, I'll never forget the time, I'm sitting on the front porch. Now, you know, I'm sitting on the front porch. It's a quiet spring night, and this is the Midwest. Now, the Midwest is different from the East in one major respect, geographically and weather-wise, that the East has got an ocean, you know, it's got a pretty big chunk of water out there, and that makes things muted in the East. In other words, winter sneaks on gradually in the East. Summer comes on gradually. As you probably, I mean, you can't tell anybody in New York, spring has been sneaking up for about 5 months here in New York. That also means that winter has been disappearing for about 5 months gradually. It's not like that in the Midwest. In the Midwest, there is no such thing as a giant body. About the biggest body of water, of course, is Lake Michigan. That's nothing compared to the ocean. And the temperature will drop 40 degrees in one afternoon, like in an hour. The weird thing, you're standing out on a ball field, the temperature is 85 degrees, and you're sweating. Maybe it's 90, and the water, the sweat is trickling down your back and rolling down your backbone and gathering down around your belt. You're in the outfield there. And just like that, instantly, it's like somebody is open. Have you ever walked into a store, into the meat refrigeration department? It's kind of warm in the store. And they open the door and this cold breath comes out at you. Well, that's the kind of wind that suddenly hits without any warning. It just goes, the wind comes out of the Arctic, or wherever the heck the wind comes from, comes down along that long flue of the lake. And you're out there in the outfield, you're sweating, it's 90 degrees. And the wind hits you, just on the side of the face. One side of you is now 55 degrees, the other side is 90. Because the wind has not yet reached your left side. It's coming from your right. And it is that quick. By the time you walk from center field to second base, the temperature can actually drop 30 degrees. And I've seen it happen. Now, what this does produces some wild effects. This is why you're constantly hearing about tornadoes out there in the Midwest. Because this this juxtaposition of cold air and hot air produces this wild thing. We used to stand, I remember one afternoon standing in center field, and this is a ballpark, not a field, not a cornfield or anything like that, a real ballpark, see, with the screen all around it, the stands and so on. And I'm out in center field. We were having a practice one day, the ball team I was playing on. And they're throwing the ball around, and a bunch of pitchers are warming up over here, and guys are hitting fungo fly balls out in the outfield, and we're chasing flies and throwing the ball in. When all of a sudden, just like that, this breath of cold air just went, just came moving across the field, and you could almost see it happen. Instantaneously, there was a... The wind swirls, makes a swirl like, you know, just a... You've seen those little whirlpools like that, and it rose up in the air from first base. Now, the wind came from left field, moving towards right field. It moved over towards first base instantly in the first base coaching box. Just went... This corkscrew went up in the air, and you could see papers and things go straight up, maybe 75, 100, 200 feet in the air, just instantly like that. This thing started to move. It gathered speed. While we're watching, it went moved along the baselines. It moved from first to second, sucking up the infield as it went. It literally sucked up the infield. You know, the clay, the mud. It wasn't mud. It was just dust, clay. It was a hot summer day. Sucked up the infield, and as we watched, in the space of about, maybe 20 seconds, that thing stopped being an invisible circular corkscrew of wind with a few papers swirling and became bright yellow because of the infield. It was sucking the infield right up, just... It moved over second base, and the bag disappeared. It had a bag, you know, the bag that was tacked on. A bag, whoop, up went the bag. And you could hear people hollering. You'd hear all the guys, the ball players were running. You'd hear this hollering, hey, hey, oh, well, like that. It then moved back. It doubled back over the pitcher's mound, sucked up about 4,000 pounds more of dirt, went over the backstop, knocked it flat. All of this happened in about a... Just knocked the backstop flat, knocked one end of the stands flat, moved over into the infield, or rather into the parking lot, sucked up 14,000 pounds of cinders, and then proceeded to break about five windshields of cars, but just broke these windshields. Oh, bang, crash, a hood flew off, and then it disappeared. It's all gone. And the dust started to float down. You could see the dust and a little piece of paper. And we never did find second base, by the way. I don't know where the second base... Second base is probably in orbit somewhere. That if any of these astronauts see a second base flying past them somewhere 150 miles out in space, I know where it came from. It just completely disappeared. Our second base, which we had bought, you know, are you aware that people pay for second base and first base? Somebody buys it. Well, our ball team had bought, we owned the bases. Our second base was gone, and the windshields were just shattered. A row of cars, about five cars, no windshields. One of them lost the hood. And silence, just like that. And the temperature, 85 again, went slowly up to about 87. And that one little pocket of cold air had passed by and moved off into the distance, just like that. But, however, I was witness to a phenomenon that very few people have ever seen as a result of one of these strange little puffs of cold air. I saw something. And in about 18... Speaking of strange phenomena, this is WOR AM and FM New York. You have the little Miller Beer Whoopee in there?
WBAI
New
York.
Miller, I like the bright, clear tasting beer. Miller, I like the champagne of bottled beer.
There's only one champagne of bottled beer. Sparkling, flavorful, distinctive. Miller High Life. Brewed from a century-old recipe, Miller High Life has a rich heritage and tradition. A bright, clear taste. Unequaled, unquestioned, unchanging. Available on tap, in cans, and in familiar crystal clear bottles. Miller High Life is always sparkling, flavorful, distinctive. Enjoy Miller High Life yourself.
Miller High Life, the champagne of bottled beer.
Yes, Miller High Life, the champagne of bottled beer.
Okay, very good. Now, one thing we got to get out of the way quickly here, and that is we will be on at the Limelight tomorrow night. However, the show is not a live show tomorrow night. It's taped for a very good reason. We will not be live at the Limelight this week. However, we should be live at the Limelight next week. However, the show will be on the air. As I said, it's an earlier show. We've gone back over all the Limelight shows of the last year or so and picked one we thought was a pretty good show. And for those of you who didn't hear it, it's there. For those of you who did hear it, it's there. You may want to hear it again. That's tomorrow night from 10:30, our usual time, the Limelight, okay? Now, let's see. We've got the Miller Rover. Yes, Rover Cars. And, you know, it's getting to be a little redundant to talk about the Rover because, curiously enough, it's like a tidal wave. More people are hearing of this car than ever before all of a sudden. And I suspect it's a reaction to the adverse criticism of a lot of automotive engineers around the world. On behalf of the American designer, I can only say this, that there are very few safe cars built anywhere, contrary to public opinion. The automobile, as a mass-produced means of transportation, has a lot of engineering problems that can't be so easily solved as writing a snappy book about it. And also, it's commensurate. You have to realize, too, that they're turning out a piece of gear that if it were turned out to the kind of public safety that most people seem to expect, it would cost maybe $8,000 for the average small car. It's a fact. It's just an absolute fact of nature and mass production. And for those of you who might be interested in a really fine machine and is generally considered to be one of the best designs for high-speed transportation, very efficient, extremely economical, we would like to recommend a Rover 2000 TC, which is specifically tuned for American driving. You know, this is that we drive very differently from any other place in the world. High-speed, long-distance driving is a rarity in the rest of the world. They just don't have the kind of super highways we have. And the 2000 TC is a Rover which is specially tuned for American driving. It's a beautiful car. And if you'd like to see pictures of it, we'll send them along. Rover 2000. Just drop us a card. Now, this is another kettle of fish as far as transportation is concerned. I happen to be a person who enjoys his motorcycle as a kind of hobby. I've had a motorcycle now. Let's see, the first one I got was 1959, thereabouts. And the current motorcycle that I am driving is a Honda 305 Super Hawk, which is a fine machine, and I would not recommend it to every neophyte-type motorcycle driver. This is a lot of machine. And if you're thinking in terms of a motorcycle, I could give you no better advice than for you to consult with Fleischmann. This is one of the biggest motorcycle dealers in the world. They have five different locations out on the island, and any one of them can give you great service. They'll get the insurance for you. They'll teach you how to ride it. They'll pick the proper machine for you. You know, you just don't go in and say, give me a motorcycle. And that's not like a car. There are many different classes and types of motorcycle, and they're all made by the same manufacturer. In other words, Honda makes a motorcycle that ranges all the way from a little putt-putt for the girl with the Courage boots, all the way, and that can be, incidentally, one of the more dangerous of the machines. Most people think the slower and the littler, the safer it is. It's quite the opposite. But they build them all the way on up to the top competition machine. So when you go in, you got to get good advice. and the Fleischmann will give it to you. They won't sell you something that you shouldn't have. This is Fleischmann. They're out in Long Beach. They're out on West Islip and in Bayshore. There's one in North Shore, Fleischmann Honda, North Shore, Northern Boulevard in Douglaston, Long Island. And there's one, the one I go to all the time is in Queens. It's on Queens Boulevard, about a mile west of the Macy's. Ask for old friendly Al there. He'll put you straight. Okay, we're all cool now? All right. Now, getting back to this phenomenon of the tornado. You know, very few people have ever seen a tornado. I have been, I don't know whether it's privileged or cursed, to have been present on three separate occasions. Now, what I saw there, what I just described, was really not a tornado. It was an embryonic tornado that was aborted. That is a tornado that started out, but that did not follow through. In short, a tornado can be... you've probably seen a little whirlwind once in a while when you go to a ballpark. This is really, in some way, this is kind of a spawn tornado, but not a real one. Many tornadoes, which people see at the ballpark, they'll see a little spinning wind. This really comes from air currents that have gathered in the stands and have formed a circular motion and that produce this little whirlwind. That's a whirlwind, but a tornado is a different scene. A tornado comes from a clash of two types of air hitting together. It doesn't come from wind blowing under the second deck at Yankee Stadium. And that's why a tornado can be formed and is most often formed on, say, a level flat prairie in Kansas where there is not a grandstand in 1,000 miles. When suddenly out of this wheat field will come this monster. And I'll tell you, if you've ever seen a tornado, you will never forget it. It is one of the things which I think is one of the most awesome, wild, scary sights in all of nature. And I have happened to have seen three of them and was once caught in one. A tornado one time passed by not more than, I would say, 100, maybe 200, maybe 150 feet from where I was. And it just came out of the blue like the proverbial bat out of hell and just tore the roof off of a building I was standing next to. It tore down three high-tension poles right in a line in the middle of the steel mill where I was that day. Picked up a Ford that I was, there it was, just turned it right over. I saw a transformer come down from the top of a high-tension line, land on the top of a station wagon, and go right through the body. And all the high-tension, the 30,000-volt lines came down with explosions and rushes. Don't tell me about tornadoes. I saw this. It pulled, crazy. You know, the funny things about tornadoes, I don't know whether this is boring you or not, but some of the funny things about tornadoes is it's almost impossible to exaggerate the odd things that they will do. You've always heard about the straw that is driven through the 8-foot solid oak, that kind of thing. But they will do odd things. They're selective. For example, I had a bag on me, a big leather bag. I was working as a mail boy in the steel mill. And I had a big leather bag, you know, a mailman's bag, big bag on the side. And I had this mail. And I had a flap over the top of it. And suddenly this wind hit. Now, I didn't get blown by the wind, actually. I did not feel any wind. I heard this tremendous noise, this just unbelievably overwhelming noise. It's like a 10,000 freight trains are running right over you. Just, you can't believe it. It breaks your eardrums. And many men have had their eardrums broken by pressures of one kind or another, by being near a tornado. Well, this thing went, rah, and she went past. And it sort of hummed, too. There's a thrumming sound. You go, it has a mechanical quality. It doesn't sound like anything in nature. Nature, you know, when you hear a sound in nature, there is a ragged unpredictability about it. So the sound of wind blowing goes... Wind varies almost without any predictability. But a tornado has a predictable sound like a freight train. A machine, it goes, blah, 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 blah. You can almost take the frequency of it and measure it. I imagine you could put it on a scope And you could see the waveform of the sound this thing is making, and it's a regular, almost a sine wave, with a few odd distorted cycles thrown in. That thing sounds like a giant generator. That's really what it sounds like. Not like a freight train, but like an enormous generator. And it stops abruptly. And then, of course, the sound that takes over is the sound of everything being busted up. Roofs flying off, people screaming, cars being uprooted, trees going down, the river being sucked up. But what this one did, it took the mail right out of my mail sack. Now, how it did it, I don't know. My mail sack was empty, and it was packed full of this mail. Company mail just was gone. I didn't even see it fly. Just whoop. It was that fast. And I lost all the mail. As far as I know, none of it was ever found. It just disappeared. That's it. And this is the eerie part of it was that this happened about 3 or 4 city blocks from where the main office was that I had come out of. I worked out of the main office where the mail room was. They knew nothing about it. About 3 blocks away. It would be as if almost as if you were in Midtown, and suddenly an atom bomb hit in the middle of town, and you were about 2 blocks away, and you didn't know anything about it. And everybody came staggering in, you know, with their clothes ripped off and all. They says, wow, the bomb hit. He said, what bomb? What are you talking about? They thought, I was the first one. I rushed into this office, and the place was just torn up. I was a kid, you know, I was scared of my mail. Oh, wow, you know, my mail's gone. And I called up the office, and I says, a tornado just hit, and the mail's gone. And I said, are you out of your mind? What are you talking about? I says, a tornado just hit the #1 plant. And all my mail is gone. The guy says, all right, kid. Now, come on. Cut out the funny business. What do you want? And there I was. But the tornado had knocked down about 2/3 of the steel mill, and it had gone its way. And nobody knew at that moment that it had happened. Well, now, one other thing happened to me. I'm a kid, see. There'll be no more music, okay? One other thing happened when I was a kid. I am sitting on the front porch, and it's a hot day. Boy, it's hot. It was twilight, just dusk. Well, before I preface it, I will preface this story with a thing that came out of the New York Times. I have told this story once before. I told this story about 2 years ago, I think, on the air. And I must have gotten 50 letters from various guys, like guys who were at Princeton and were studying physics, one thing and another. And they all wrote and they said, oh, that's an old wives' tale. Forget it. That's ridiculous. What you saw, either you didn't see it or you made it up. It's ridiculous. Here is a note in the New York Times of about 2 weeks ago. It says, ball lightning proved in theory. I will read this to you. Two scientists at the Westinghouse Research Laboratories in Pittsburgh say that they have proved the existence of ball lightning, even though they have never seen it or even reproduced it in the laboratory. It is that rare. Through the years, most scientists have tended to place ball lightning in the same corner with ectoplasm and flying saucers and gnomes and elves and all that stuff. However, a growing belief that ball lightning might hold some clue to the harnessing of thermonuclear power and a mounting number of credible eyewitnesses to it have melted much of the skepticism. Ball lightning, eyewitnesses have said, appears as a round, moving light blob the size of a grapefruit. It can be almost any color, but is usually a bright white. It drifts through the air or near the ground, and then disappears, sometimes with a bang, sometimes without a whimper. Now, shall I tell you my story of ball lightning now? Okay. I'm sitting on the porch, you see. And this is in Indiana. Now, you've got to understand, this is not a farm. Everybody, when I say Indiana, everybody thinks immediately of waving cornfields and all that. It's a suburb. And it's a hot, really a hot spring day. Really hot, and there have been a few showers in the afternoon, and now it is about 7:30, 8 o'clock maybe. It's after supper, and the fireflies are out. The fireflies come out suddenly in northern Indiana. One day, there's no fireflies. The next day, they're all out. And you can just see them winking and blinking all around in that kind of a half light. It's twilight, see? Now, I'm sitting on the front porch. And my kid brother is doing something. I don't know why I was on the front porch. I just remember I was sitting on the swing. We had this swing with the big chains, the iron chains that go up to the roof, you know, and we're swinging back and forth. We had a big, flat, veranda-type front porch. All the houses had them there. The houses out there are far more Western. I realize now that I've lived in the East for so long, they're far more Western than they are Eastern. Now, you've seen pictures, of course, of the Western ranch houses. I mean, the real ranch houses with the big, wide, flat veranda. Well, all the houses had those wide verandas. Some of them were encased in screen, enclosed porches. Others were just open. But all of them were raised off the ground. They had steps that went down, and there would be a lawn out in front and a little terrace, and then that would be the street down there, the street and the sidewalk. There was always a lawn out in front, and usually along the side of the porch, all around the side and the railing, would be the snowball bushes, and there would be lilac bushes and big bushes that grew high, all kinds of bushes, usually snowball bushes or lilac. There were other kinds, but they'd grow high up almost even to the top of the railing, and every porch had a front swing. These swings, there were different types. There was the two-seater type, and then there was the single type, you know, just to swing back and forth. And we had that kind. And it would seat maybe two or three people if there were three little people. There were two. They were, you know, two. And grandmothers would sit in these swings all the time, and mother types, and watch, just sit out there. And there would be hundreds of people for blocks around, would be sprinkling and watering the lawns. And once in a while, you'd hear the sound of a lawnmower somewhere, some guy is cutting the lawn. Well, it is that kind of an afternoon, and it's been hot all day. It's now after supper, and I'm sitting there on the front porch. And across the street, Mrs. Stryker, who was the terror of the neighborhood. Mrs. Stryker, there were two of them. This one was particularly enigmatic. Mrs. Stryker was the lady who constantly called the police. Now, we had another one who always did that, but Mrs. Stryker was more unpredictable than the other one. Mrs. Stryker was the kind who, from time to time, would allow a foul ball to roll across her lawn, and in fact, often fielded it, and then would get into the game. On another occasion, a foul ball would go across the yard, and instantly, the squad car would be there, and six kids would be yelled at, and you know, the whole scene. So there's Mrs. Stryker over there. And Mrs. Stryker has her radio going. She was a radio nut, and she was hard of hearing. And there were constantly people yelling about Mrs. Stryker. She would turn her radio on. You could hear it for blocks, and the radio would be playing. And what's the matter, huh? Is there trouble in there? 5 minutes, okay. And so the radio would be playing, you know, the whole scene, and it was hot. And, boy, you could hear the sound of the sprinklers going. That sound, you know, that sound of whoosh, 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 sprinklers squirting water. So I'm sitting there on the porch. Got it? My kid brother's banging around, rolling around the floor. And a couple of cars go by. When all of a sudden, I see coming down the street this peculiar thing. It looked like a motorcycle. It's coming from way down towards the left, down out towards the swamp. At a swamp that was about four or five or eight blocks to the left. That would be to our west, as I sit there, to the west, about maybe four or five blocks, where the sun is now going down. I see this light coming. It's coming right down the middle of the street. Just right down the middle. Not a soul on the street. Not a car. But people on all the porches. And then I begin to hear people. You hear, hey, woo, wah, wee, woo. And this light is coming. And I holler, hey, Ma, hey, look at this. And my mother's in the front of the house. You know, she's somewhere banging around with a dust cloth. It's like, hey, Ma, look at this, hey. And my mother looks out of the screen door. She says, what do you want? I says, hey, Ma, look at the light. And she looks. And sure enough, floating down the street, about 3 feet off the ground, is a light. The light was totally self-contained. It was like, I differ with them, it was larger than a basketball, or rather than a grapefruit. It was about the size of a good, about the size of a basketball, roughly. It was much larger than a grapefruit. About the size of maybe a beach ball, or a medicine ball. And this thing is floating quietly, just floating down the street. And the people are looking at it. Everybody's looking. And the guys, they stop sprinkling. They can't figure what the devil this thing is. Floating right down. And it bobbed a little bit. It would float in the air. Not a sound. And all the while, whoosh, 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 whoosh. You hear the old sprinklers going, whoosh, 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 whoosh. And once in a while, somebody would go, hey, ooh. You hear somebody, hey, Charlie, look, hey, well. And people began to get scared. You could hear ladies making funny screaming sounds. This thing is just floating quiet. And it was beautiful. It was not white. The one that I saw was kind of a bluish orange. It was white, I suppose, if you can consider a bright light white. But it wasn't white, really. It was more blue and more orange, but glowing. You could hardly look at it, but it was beautiful. And there was a kind of nimbus around it. Just a vague halo around it. Just floated up and down like that. Well, I looked at this thing. I couldn't believe it. It came right down the street. It is now maybe 100 feet away, and right smack in the middle of the street, right directly in front of our house. And across the street, you can hear. You could hear Mrs. Stryker's radio. Well, this thing stopped, paused for just an instant. It just was floating. I can still see it. It floated like it was on waves. It floated and it stopped in front of the house, right directly in front of our house for about, oh, maybe a millisecond or two, just a brief pause. And then it drifted. It made a slow drift to the left and started to drift up over Mrs. Stryker's lawn. And by that time, my old man is looking out of the window. He's got his mouth hanging open. My mother is looking out of the door. Her mouth is hanging open. My kid brother is under the screen. He's under the screen. You can just see him down there. He's whimpering. And you could see Mrs. Bruner out there. Mrs. Bruner has taken the pledge. Mr. Bruner has stopped drinking forever. And you could hear the people. This thing floated right up over Mrs. Stryker's terrace, floated up over her lawn, and went right in through an open window. Right in, just whoop, like that. And all the while, you could hear. You hear a radio going. She's in the living room there, listening to Bing Crosby or something. It floated right in through the window. And the people all down the block, there was kind of a, you know, everybody watched this thing float into her house. There was a pause. It lasted maybe about 10 seconds, a pause. You can, and then all of a sudden you hear, boom, and silence. The radio stopped, just like that. The radio stopped. And then you could hear Mrs. Stryker. She comes tearing out of the house, white as a sheet, and she is hollering about ghosts incoherently. She is hollering about ghosts, and she's shaking like that. And then we saw suddenly, in a nutty way, you saw this thing. It's now on the other side of the house. And it drifts off into a vacant lot. It is now a different color. It's like a light blue. And it is smaller. It drifts into a vacant lot and then instantly went, whoosh, was gone. And the entire neighborhood hung suspended. That ball lightning had come all the way down from the swamp to blow up Mrs. Stryker's radio. It was blown to smithereens. Her radio was all over the front, all over the living room. And it was one of these cathedral models, you know. It was, you know, in those days, the Philco company made a radio. It was a God-fearing radio. It had little gargoyles for knobs carved out of wood. and her little Notre Dame model radio was blown to smithereens, and the entire neighborhood took it as an omen. Every last one of them. And they turned to spiritualism. But seriously, that was the night that I saw ball lightning. And ever since that time, I have told people, they say, out of your mind. Ah, come on, that's an old wives' tale. It's like the story about snakes rolling downhill. They take their tail in their mouth, and they roll downhill as a hoop. Ah, get out of here. And now, at long last, the New York Times and the Westinghouse Research Laboratory says there is ball lightning. Mrs. Stryker's radio is dead. Long live.
And that was Gene Shepherd from May 27th of 1966. And this is WBAI New York. Mass backwards running over slightly. I'll be here with the Golden Age Radio Sunday night at 7 p.m. Wake Up Call is coming up almost immediately. Now I get to go home and leave the sweat box of WBAI for the sweat box in Astoria, where at least I can throw most of my clothes off. This is Max Mead thanking you for tuning in. Getting ready to turn it over to Bernard White and Reggie with Wake Up Call. Oh, tomorrow morning in the 3:30 to 6 hour, a Miko special. Stay tuned and don't miss it. Right here on WBAI New York.